Welcome back, Mike Warren Thomas. It's Naturally Green, and it is winter. It is a cold day, cold week, cold month after a very mild January. February has below normal temperatures. Not super cold, but I don't know, 10 degrees when I got up this morning. Wind chill of, it was like 3. So some chilly weather. And a couple things to help you get through winter. Buy some seeds. That's a lot of fun to look for seeds. And, you know, the packets are a few dollars each, depending on where you buy them. And they're a small investment in terms of money. But each of those packets can produce a lot of seeds. I got some poppies, an heirloom poppy, Lauren's Dark Grape, from Renee's garden. And these are gorgeous dark purple, and the 3 to 5 feet high. The flowers 4 to 5 inches. And can't wait to see these. So, again, you can get a packet of these for a few dollars and have, there's got to be 100 seeds in here, something like that. And you might want to start them indoors, but with these poppies, I don't think that's absolutely necessary. So get some seeds that you've never grown before. Get some, you know, some vegetables that you haven't tried, some colors of things that you haven't experimented with. And, you know, when you buy plants this spring, you know, they're already started. You get a 6-pack for, I don't know, $3, somewhere in that range probably. These seeds, you know, you get basically 100-pack. And if you don't want to start things indoors, choose things that are easy to self to sow directly this spring. And you don't have to, there are many things you don't need to start indoors. Tomatoes and peppers, those are a couple of the things that, especially peppers, really need a head start with warm temperatures. But yeah, experiment, have some fun. You know, for $10-$15, you can get a bunch of different seeds, and they may turn out to be some of your favorites. It may turn out to be things you don't want. You replace them mid-season with something else, but they're so inexpensive, and during the middle of winter, they give at least they give me a really just a great sense of hope for the season to come. Also saw a note at BuffaloNiagaraGardening.com that there's American chestnut tree seedlings that are going to be made available. And this is just in 3 counties from what I can tell. Maybe they only mentioned these counties because of the that's what they cover. I just saw this online a couple minutes ago. And it's Erie, Niagara, and Genesee County. And these chestnuts are not, these chestnut seedlings are not part of the crossing of American and Chinese chestnuts that's been going on. The Chinese chestnuts are resistant to chestnut blight. And so I think it's Chestnut Foundation that has been working to cross them to get the resistance in the American chestnut and then back cross it to take any remainder of the Chinese chestnut out of that cross. So this is not CRISPR gene splicing. This is purely sort of natural crossing of these varieties. And so that's one effort that's going on and has been for quite a long time. These seedlings, which are probably 12 inches high, something like that, actually come, according to this article, from a stand of trees, a chestnut, American chestnuts in Michigan, that were not damaged by the chestnut blight, or not yet. They say that these trees aren't fully resistant to chestnut blight, and they are trying to keep these this genetic pool of chestnuts that seem to be somewhat resistant to it, keep that going. And so there's an American Chestnut Council in Michigan that is propagating these seedlings and then providing them for groups like this that are interested in buying them. And the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, also sells seedlings and things each county, Monroe County. Again, not sure whether the chestnuts are available in Monroe County. This article seems to suggest that it's not Orleans County, not Cattaraugus, Chautauqua, just Erie, Genesee, and Niagara, where they are, the American chestnut seedlings are available. These are big trees, says 70 to 100 feet tall, and so you probably don't need a lot of these, but you might be interested in growing a chestnut. The chestnut will grow really well for a number of years. The chestnut blight seems to attack it once the tree is, from what I've read, 6 to 8 inches, 4 to 6 inches, somewhere in that range, in diameter, the trunk. And so it'll grow for quite a few years, showing no signs of chestnut blight. And again, may be significantly resistant to it from these Michigan trees. But it's often right about the time that the chestnut starts to produce nuts. It doesn't initially. It has to grow for quite a few years before it starts producing nuts. But it's usually around that time that the blight kills it. And so it's been difficult to get lots of seeds from the chestnuts, just in the hope that some of them would be resistant, as this blight kills them before they can reproduce very much. So kind of fascinating to grow a true American chestnut, not one that's been crossed with the American chestnut. And if you have room in your yard and you want a sort of a long-term project, something that if it does remain resistant, or if what this American Chestnut Council in Michigan is hoping, that they'll come up with some sort of treatment for chestnut blight, this would be one of the first chestnuts brought back to our area. I don't know of any from these Michigan's seedlings that have been sold here before. Maybe they have, but I haven't heard about it. So, again, if you want the link, email me, michael@saverlife.com. Also, we are in the middle of the Great American, or the Great Backyard Bird Count. Cornell, the Audubon Society, Birds Canada are all part of this. And they have a couple of tools to help you if you want to participate. It started yesterday, continues through Monday. And they're trying to get people involved, citizen science, to count the birds in their backyard. And there are a couple ways tools that can help you. There's something called Merlin, which also happens to be a bird, but in this case it's a computer app, smartphone app that helps identify birds. And when you install this Merlin app on your phone, you also install a specific set of birds that are likely to be in your region. So there's no sense installing Florida birds, because we're not going to see them in our backyard in the middle of winter. But again, a regionally specific field guide to birds. And it's got photos the bird calls and ID help for you as you maybe you're just getting involved in this. You can also, it looks like it's pretty easy to use. I haven't used it, but looks like a good way to have some fun, do something a little bit different, participate in this backyard bird count. Also, there's eBird, which eBird Mobile, that allows, it's another app that allows you to put in lists of birds. So if you know already a good identification, this is a way to add more birds to the bird count. So this morning I saw a cardinal, and quite high in the sky, I think a crow. But if you have a bird feeder, you probably will see a lot of birds. We have a pond, a small, tiny pond in our backyard with a little bubbler in it for the goldfish, and it's, you know, it's a couple feet deep, so the ice doesn't freeze down to where they are, but they need a little bit of oxygen, so there's a bubbler. And the sparrows and other birds, as well as neighborhood cats and squirrels, lots of different things come and drink from the pond in the winter, because the bubbler keeps some open water. And it can be very difficult for them to find water when it's this cold for an extended period. Sun's getting higher in the sky. We'll have some weather later this next week, above freezing maybe briefly. But it's hard for birds and other animals to find open water. And you can do this with a bird bath. The birdhouse on Monroe Avenue, they've got a lot of great seminars and things they do Saturdays and Tuesdays. You can check into those. But they also carry bird baths, or things that can go in bird baths that keep the water from freezing, and little heating elements. They don't turn it into a sauna. It's just to keep the water from freezing. And that can be a good way to attract birds to your yard, but also give them access to water. Again, pretty inexpensive. You do need to have a ground fault interrupter if you're going to plug something in like this. And if you don't have an outdoor outlet, that could be an issue. They may have some that are solar powered. Not sure about that. You could ask. And if you don't have a GFI outlet, you can get a little kind of adapter, GFI adapter that sort of goes in line with your, you plug that into the outlet and then plug the cord for something like this into the adapter. So there are a few options you could ask at the birdhouse. And this is an inexpensive way. And it doesn't use a lot of energy. Your electric bill is not going to go out of sight. It might if you put a hot tub in for yourself, but it's not going to go out of sight with a little heating element for the bird bath. So again, it started yesterday. It goes through the Monday the 15th. The great backyard bird count has begun. And this is one of, I think, the biggest citizen science programs going on in the United States, and as well as in Canada. So cold winter day, maybe it's fun to figure out how you could participate, and maybe, you know, if you don't have a bird feeder, go and get one or two from the birdhouse and see what you can attract over the next couple of days. As I was walking down our street here in the 19th Ward, like yesterday or day before, I could hear some chickadees, a cardinal, and it reminded me that once you know those calls, you don't necessarily even need to see them, but it's sort of, at least to me, reassuring to be able to identify what's making that call? It's kind of, in a sense, like knowing a person's name. It's you have a connection to them once you know their name. And once you identify the calls of the birds or other animals, perhaps, you have a different connection to them. And the allaboutbirds.org, which is Cornell's Lab of Ornithology website, they have a literally endless selection of bird and other animal calls available. And there's no, don't have to, I don't think you have to register or be a member, as I recall. I've got to go back and do some more research on bird calls. And they have usually bird calls that were recorded recently, but also some that were recorded back in the 50s, 60s, maybe some older, as they have built this database of bird calls. And you can also go in there and try to figure out which frogs are singing and in the spring, which starts very early. There are some peepers or tree frogs, something that they'll start while it's still winter, but the ice starts to melt a little bit. They seem incredibly early. And again, Cornell has this lab of ornithology goes well beyond birds, and it's a lot of fun to explore during the winter. So again, check that out, and maybe consider taking part in this great backyard bird count going on right now. Every year they've done it for decades, and so the data that they are gathering becomes even more important as we worry about whether the numbers of birds are dropping, whether that's happening maybe because the number of insects is dropping rather dramatically. National Geographic had a really powerful article, this probably a year or two ago now, about the insect apocalypse, and a lot of the research about that, and in a sense how much we don't know about changes in the number of insects, because we just haven't been studying that till fairly recently. So a really cool article by National Geographic. If you have comments, questions, you want more details on anything you heard me mention, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. The George Eastman Museum has their Dutch Connection going on right now through the end of February. And if you haven't been over, what a way to just get a breath of spring. I'm not going to be, and I never really have gone down south for the winter at all, but you still need some flowers, some greenery, some great fragrance from blooming bulbs, and you'll find all that at the George Eastman Museum right now with their Dutch Connection. And you'll get to see the new pavilion entrance, the expanded cafe and museum shop. They've done a lot of work since maybe the last time you've been there. I think you'll find it pretty exciting. And you should consider becoming a member so you can go back frequently, maybe go back a couple times a week to see the flowers, thousands of blooms of daffodils, tulips, hyacinths, and many other things. It goes far beyond that. So again, at the George Eastman Museum right now through February, I think February 28th, actually, literally the end of the month, is when it ends. And they will change out many, if not most, of the flowers midway through this. So it's open for nearly a month, but a forced daffodil or tulip is not going to last that long. So they force two sets of bulbs and change them out midway through this show. So it's another reason to go several times, just to see how this changes over time, over the course of the month of February. So it's really the first flower show of the year, perhaps in the United States. I don't know. I haven't heard of any other flower shows that are this early. And by the way, I mentioned last week, the Philadelphia Flower Show has been moved this year. I think it's a temporary move, as far as I know. But it will be in June rather, and outdoors, rather than in March, as it has been for 180 years or more. They are moving it outdoors because of the pandemic. And again, I assume it will move back indoors in 2022, but probably a good plan to have it outdoors. And I think it's going to be in FDR Park in Philadelphia. That should be, it'll be a lot of fun to see what they do bringing it outdoors. I think it would be kind of exciting for a lot of the landscape designers and florists and others to have something new to deal with and new challenges. And also for those of us that want to travel from our area, June will be a safer time to travel. And it also allows you to see places like Longwood Gardens in early summer, late spring, early summer, depending on the weather. So it's really, I'm excited about this move to June, at least for 1 year. Again, if you have comments, questions, you can email me, michael@saferlife.com. We'll be back with a food show, Discover the Finger Lakes this morning, but then tomorrow, if it's the grapevine here, saferlife.com. Have a great day.